This is The Topic is Trek, Episode 11, for Friday, December 15th, 2017. The name is Worf. The J is silent.
Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already!
Well, that guy sounds better every time I hear him. Anyway, hello, everyone.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm one of your co-hosts, Clinton Allvord, and beaming in to join me, as always, are Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing just wonderful. And Mr. Craig Stepp.
You must have used an old transporter. I feel a little out of place. I think my spleen's in my neck.
Yeah, I think your arm should be on the other side. No, it's okay. You can always scratch your back very easily now, so it's fine.
This is Craig's transporter.
A little Skype lag. Oh, sorry, we ran out of bandwidth on that transport.
Oh, well.
You are in error.
My transporter beam was at 300 baud.
Yeah, that's Craig all over. He's over there.
His transporter was at 44.1K, but his comm signal was at 48K. It just came out like Mickey Mouse or something.
Right.
Anyway,
speaking of Mickey Mouse, happy Star Wars premiere day when this episode airs, I believe.
Yes.
That's when the new Star Wars movie opens up.
That's that other space franchise, right?
It is.
The topic is Star.
That's right.
Star.
We'll talk about anything with
Star with an asterisk. It's a wild card. Anything that starts with Star.
It makes searching for our show really hard.
Star
really
search.
Easy. One or the other.
Star search.
And a star is born.
And this show's already falling apart.
All right, let's see if we can get ourselves back on track. Because, gentlemen, let's tap into the subspace chatter and see what's happening around the Trek universe. And this just in, we have some breaking news, which I put back together with some glue, so that's okay. The episode titles for Star Trek Discovery Chapter 2 have been revealed.
Oh.
Yes, this morning CBS announced titles for episodes 11 through 15 of Star Trek Discovery, the second chapter of the first season, kicks off on Sunday, January 7th, with the 10th episode previously announced to be titled Despite Yourself.
Episode 10, Where's My Phaser?
Yes, episode 11 is The Wolf Inside.
Actually, I read that kind of quick. I thought it said The Worf Inside.
No, that would be very confusing. We don't want to go there yet.
The self-help book, The Worf Inside.
Episode 12 is Vaulting Ambition. I'm not sure what's going on there. Episode 13, What's Past is Prologue. Did that hint at time travel?
Maybe.
That's what I was thinking, yeah.
Episode 14 is The War Without, The War Within. Might have something to do with the Klingon War. And episode 15, which will be the final for season one, is Will You Take My Hand?
Stamets gets married.
Or they just find Craig's hand in the transporter. I don't know.
Oh.
Yeah.
Call back.
Will you take that hand to the garbage disposal?
So obviously with titles like this, it's next to impossible to glean anything from it. Any thoughts on any of these besides the possibility of time travel in that what's past is prologue?
Vaulting ambition could be pole vaulting.
Could be. Could be. The Olympics tie-in going on. It's this Winter Olympics, but yeah, it could work out.
You know, what'll happen is, and of course, you know, once you watch the episode, you go, oh, that's what it meant. You know, and we could come up with different things all day. I have a feeling the wolf inside. I think it's either going to be something with
Lorca,
with Lorca, or
Tyler.
Tyler, yes.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering about that one.
Or both. Or both. Oh,
yeah. Mm-hmm. True. True. So, all right. Well, I'm guessing it's possible that wherever they ended up in at the end of episode 9, they get back from there in episode 14. That's just a guess on my part, too.
Back by the end of the season.
Have fun storming the castle.
That was my next line. Thank you.
All right. So let's move from this breaking news to other semi-breaking news from Craig.
Okay. And I tried to pull this up and it says, you'll be redirected back to your article in 2 seconds. One. And now I can read it. Okay, there we go. So this is the big hot topic button story that we've seen in the last couple weeks. Quentin Tarantino hatches a Star Trek movie idea and Paramount and J.J. Abrams to assemble in the writer's room. Which I think that's already happened at this point, but on this particular article that we're looking at, it's an exclusive, already busy prepping to direct the film he just set up at Sony Pictures. Quentin Tarantino is also planning to boldly go where he has not gone before. Sources said Tarantino has come up with a great idea for a Star Trek movie at Paramount. After sharing his idea with J.J. Abrams, who himself is very busy prepping for Star Wars Episode 9. I've heard the plan is to assemble a writer's room of scribes who will hear Tarantino's take and begin to put a movie together. If it all works out, Tarantino might direct with Abrams producing. I'm kind of excited about that. So while Tarantino has come up with his own original films, many have wondered what might do with the reins of an existing franchise. He has only done that on television, twice directing episodes on CSI and once on an episode of ER. He has spoken about the appeal of taking on one of the James Bond movies. Was he just going to circle around and do them all? But the hard part of something like that is getting the rights holders to give him a wide creative swath that comes along with the final cut and tour like Tarantino. This would give a remarkable boost to a vulnerable franchise for Paramount, which is looking to build under them, studio chief Jim, I started to say Galapagos.
Giannopoulos.
Oh, that's it. So we'll talk about this a little bit more. I think yes. Clinton's wanting, you're going to cut me off. See, I knew it.
I am going to cut you off because this is such an interesting topic. We're going to talk about it more in a little while. So, okay. So to coin a phrase, we'll dog ear that for now.
Okay.
I have to work something in there at some point. Or and we'll move on to the next topic, but we will come back to this subject in a little while.
All right.
So next up, we have a story from Entertainment, entertainmentweekly.com. Dakota Fanning is a Star Trek fan on a mission in Please Stand By. And this is a new movie coming out beginning of next year. In Please Stand By, Dakota Fanning from War of the Worlds and the Twilight Saga plays a young woman with autism who runs away from her caregiver in order to boldly go and deliver her 500-page Star Trek script to a writing competition in Hollywood. Will she live long and prosper? You can find out January 26th when the film is released in theaters on demand on Amazon Video, and on iTunes. Please Stand By is written by Michael Golamko, NBC's Grimm, and directed by Ben Lewin, The Favor, The Watch, and The Very Big Fish, and John Hawkes starring The Sessions. The film co-stars Toni Collette, Alice Eve, who of course played Carol Marcus in the reboots, and Jessica Roth from the recent hit horror film Happy Death Day, with a special guest appearance by Patton Oswalt.
Of course.
And, I don't know if you guys guess who speaks Klingon in this.
Yeah.
TV's son of TV's Frank?
Yes, exactly.
Is playing TV Star Trek.
And voiceover of the Goldbergs.
Yeah, that's right.
So I had a chance to watch this trailer, and I also had a chance to read a couple of articles about it. And one person was pointing out that the young woman who plays the lead does have autism, and he was kind of biting his nails about how autism is going to be treated in this movie. And I'm not an expert in that, so I can't tell. You can clearly tell that she's dealing with things in her own way, and we'll have to see as word comes in on the movie about how realistic this is to where she is in the spectrum. Obviously isn't clear from any of this, but it looked like an entertaining, and I got a feeling it's a very heartwarming and possibly tear-jerking movie. Yeah. At the same time,
right?
So
actually I watched the trailer, of course, and I thought it looked interesting. I didn't think about it as deep as how they're going to treat autism. I'm sure they'll address it realistically. But I like the aspect of her trying to get the script to a contest for Star Trek.
Yeah, I think that if it's supposed to be for a movie, I think the fact that it's 500 pages may be a bigger problem than anything, because that's a little long for a movie script. I don't think the Lord of the Rings trilogy script was 500 pages, but
actually, well, I thought it was like, for an episode of Voyager.
Oh, well, I know that she's
still 500 pages would be
500 page episode of Voyager.
It's an epic.
Lots of dialogue read really fast.
Yeah.
So that's coming up. And I want to mention here, as we always do, that all the links to all the things we talk about in the episode, you can find in the show notes for episode 11. And that's over at thetopicistrek.com.
Ding. That's your huge shot.
I got it. It was just on dim. There you go.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm actually going to make an effort to see it. I didn't realize it was on the streaming sites as well. So
yeah, I didn't realize that either. So it'll be on Amazon. So I think a lot of us will probably end up seeing it that way, or iTunes.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to our next story that comes to us from Chuck talking about some theft.
Theft, thief, stop. From comicbook.com. Apparently Christian Slater stole his Star Trek VI uniform. Oh, the scandal.
You are in error.
You know, there's somebody going, that's where it's at. You know, they've been looking for it for a year.
Yeah, some wardrobe guy is going, I can't find costume number 24.
Somebody lost their job because of this. Yeah.
Christian Slater just had a cameo in Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, but that didn't stop him from taking a little something with him when he left the film set. Slater played an untitled nightly duty officer. He said nightly. Night duty officer aboard. Just fun to say night duty. On board the USS Excelsior in 1991 Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, and was credited as, quote, Excelsior communications officer. Was he the one that woke up Sulu in the middle of the night?
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
right. That's what I thought. All right. Slater, who's a huge Star Trek fan, got the role with a little help from his mother, casting director Mary Jo Slater. Christian Slater was pretty big in Hollywood at the time anyway, just having come off roles in 1989's Heathers and 91's Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, Men in Tights. But having an in with the film's crew certainly helped get the role. Oh, yes, Slater admitted to Graham Norton's radio show on BBC Two, Radio 2. My mother was the casting director, so yeah, that was a bit of a nepotism there for you. I'm not even going to kid around. I had an in, and that was it. Slater also owned up to the fact that he stole the uniform he wore in the scene and is still wearing it today. I mean, he still has it to this day.
No, what? What? What?
Take a shower.
You can see him wear it on Mr. Robot.
It's an important uniform, too, because the uniform William Shatner wore is Captain Kirk in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. I stole the costume, by the way, he said. I have it in a box somewhere. It was William Shatner's costume from Star Trek II, actually. Now it's mine. So yeah. How did Slater manage to keep the Starfleet uniform? Well, I wasn't supposed to, he said. I walked off the set. gets in his car. This is rather comfortable. Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, was the final film for the crew of the Star Trek, the original series, though some, most notably Shatner's Kirk, returned, of course, four generations. Not four as in the number four. Star Trek Generations.
Yeah.
Although it was like four generations. I was captaining a ship before your great-great-grandfather was... Anyway, so it seems like Slater managed to... I just went down a crazy...
rabbit hole, but come back up. Come back to us.
Yeah,
come really to back the light, carry on. Come
it's back. Been a long day. My brain is just going anywhere it wants right now. The original Star Trek crew were recast for the reboot movie series beginning in 2009, Star Trek, continuing through Star Trek Into Darkness in 2013, and Star Trek Beyond in 2016. A fourth film was planned, but Paramount has been pretty silent about the developments. And the news that Quentin Tarantino is working on Star Trek film on his own. See earlier story. Oh, newsflash.
I told you we weren't going to talk about that again yet.
All right, fine.
What I get a kick out of is, you know, is he going to hold on to this uniform after he sees the prices that these things get at these auctions?
That might be his retirement fund.
Yeah, I mean, if that... And I guess you would be able to tell whether or not that was actually Kirk's, because they would have sewn in on the label in the back. It would have the actor and or character's name written on the tag.
Would it still uniform. Have the blood from the ensign who died in engineering?
And which one of those? Because there's one with the blood stain here, and then there's one with slightly higher there, and then, you know, it's several of those.
You're paying way too close of attention.
Sorry. All right. Well, you know, when I pay too much attention to things, I like to just sit back, relax, and have something to drink. And I think Craig might have something to help me.
Why, yes. How about a nice Romulan ale?
Can I use my Romulan ale bottle opener?
You certainly may.
Sure. Actually, I just like using the transporter just to get the bottle cap off. It's a credible waste of resources, but...
So precise.
It's a great party trick. So Star Trek's Romulan ale may be illegal in the Federation. We don't talk about that. But that doesn't mean Starfleet officers never get a taste of the highly intoxicating alcoholic drink. Some of you may know the pale, dark blue liquid is strong that it could even roll the stoutest of Klingons under the table. During Riker and Troy's wedding in Star Trek Nemesis, Worf complained about the effects of the drink, saying that Romulan ale should be illegal. That didn't sound like Worf.
No, who was that? Another horrible transporter accident was happening there.
Going through puberty.
Yeah. To which Geordi LaForge reminded him that, yes, it was illegal. Yeah. So still, in our happy Siffy happy hour video below, which is a video attached to this article, Tim Monaghan. You know what? I only have trouble reading names when I'm with you guys.
You see what I got to work with?
We just call him Tim. How about that?
Yeah.
There are some Tim. Who call me Tim.
Anyways, Siffy's Wire, I'm saying Siffy because we're talking about the TV station, not the. So Siffy's Wire ambassador to Romulus is on hand to graciously share with us the recipe of the illegal drink, which Star Trek TOS's Dr. Lennon McCoy used it for medicinal purposes.
Wink, wink.
Yeah. So anyway, you can watch the video and get all the details. Of course, alien ingredients are hard to find on Earth, and having to cross the neutral zone to get your hands on them can be super dangerous, Kobayashi Maru. We have done the next best thing, chosen ingredients found in our big blue planet that will allow you to make the cocktail as close as possible to the genuine article. Deliciously slow brewed. Deliciously slow. Check out our famous recipe below And remember to live long and drink responsibly.
So I watched it, and it seems like an interesting drink to have. You know, you always have to have a use to use the blue Curacao, because it's like you have a giant bottle of...
It's the redheaded stepchild. It's like you have it.
Yeah, you have this giant bottle of the blue stuff. You got to use it for something.
There's always some colored liquid. Grenadine is another one of those. Like,
what? Yeah.
So I might mix up a batch of this and I'll report back.
We're not gonna see you on like moonshiners anytime soon, are we?
Oh, I'm not saying anything. I'm not saying.
Actually, you know what? I do have some really good ginger beer downstairs. I might have to do this myself.
Okay. So we'll report back on that, and we'll put that on the equivalent of whatever the Romulan equivalent of ranking beers is on that that app. What's that app that you guys
Untapped?
Yes, yeah. Untapped.
By the way, speaking of getting back, I'm going to say I mentioned last episode that I was going to read the book about the Prometheus,
mm-hmm.
and I went to order it, and I said, "Well, let me see what everybody else is saying about it." And people were saying it was so horrible they should have never printed it. So I was like, you know what? I'll find something else to read. I'm gonna pass on that one then. They were talking about how bad it was.
I know at least the first of the Discovery novels people really liked, right. And I think they've come out with the second, and they're releasing a third soon, which has to do with Saru.
That's right. You're absolutely right. You know what? That's what I'm going to track down. I totally forgot about those. And I think I did see a story about that this week. So about the Saru one. So yeah, I'll go do one of those. I'll start from the start.
All right. You read the book. I'll make the drink. There we go. That's a
fair.
Great idea.
Drink. Okay.
Now, next up, this is a story that has to do with three Star Trek technologies we don't actually want in real life.
Mobile phones.
let's see if my page will cooperate with me here. It's one of those websites where it's so full of ads that you try to scroll the page and it goes,
Oh, you guys got to get an ad blocker, let me tell you.
I can think of three bio life forms we don't want in real life.
Well, let's
dribble.
You know, the SETI eels, the flying fried eggs. What were those things anyway?
I mentioned it last time. What was the name of those things? I don't remember. I mentioned it a couple episodes ago.
That would be a fun game just to play with your friends. Just like throw fried eggs at each other and see if we can hit them in the back.
Well, you can read plenty of articles online celebrating the wonders of Trek tech. See, I'm getting us back on track here. We want the Star Trek universe to become a reality so bad we're actually creating a lot of the technology already. Things like communicators, which are cell phones, portable data tablets, universal translators, though not very good ones, and holodecks. Well, my Oculus Rift comes pretty close.
And hoverboards.
Are all great additions. No, that's a different franchise, and they don't hover.
You don't want time machines.
Yeah. But what about the tech that's not so incredible? We see some pretty bad stuff happening to people in the Trek universe. Let's look at the tech we probably don't want to see become reality.
Dick Tracy watches.
Wrong franchise again. So they list three things here, and I don't know whether I agree with them or not. The first one is food replicators. And their argument on the food replicators is that, okay, well, it makes the food, but what does a computer know about taste? And, you know, I'm sure that the programmers do a kind of a good job, but let's face it, Starfleet might cut corners at some point.
And software has bugs. Your food might have bugs.
Yeah, well, the bugs are full of protein, so I think
depends on your species.
Your Earl Grey tea.
And in relationship to our previous article, this one here, the second one they don't want to see is Synthahol.
Yeah, I never quite understood the point of this one.
the point of synthahol itself?
You could drink as much as you want and never get intoxicated. So it's more like...
No. You can get intoxicated, but the effects are dismissed easily.
There's what? No hangover?
Sure.
Yeah, or dancing around with a lampshade on your head. Yeah, what kind of effects are you talking about?
All right, so you're in 10 forward and your time went on, and then all of a sudden, Ensign Tomazi, report to the bridge.
Go to the bridge.
And then you start touching people and they get intoxicated. No. Yeah, I figured you get like a little hyper spray or something and then you'd be sober.
Right, which is why when you're smuggling actual alcohol like, Romulan ale, and suddenly that packs a wallop and it's like, oh, that wallop is hanging around, isn't it?
I thought when Picard went to Earth in right after
You think they're all drinking non-alcoholic beer?
That's what I thought. Yeah, because his brother says, you can drink all you want and there's no effect. It's like, what, you don't get drunk? Then what's the point? It just tastes like bad grape juice. It's a bit like caffeine-free Mountain Dew.
See, I'm going to have to read this on Memory Alpha because I always thought synthahol was, you party, drink, or whatever, and then you can easily dismiss the...
Well, that's what I thought as well, that my impression, anyway, was that you could kind of have some of the effects of alcohol, but it wasn't something that was habit-forming, and it wasn't something that was that you couldn't get rid of rather easily.
Your liver can't process it. All the good things.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Let's face it.
It's like having Diet Coke versus Coke. Actually, synthahol is a chemical variant of alcohol. It appears to have the same taste and smell as a real alcohol to most individuals, but none of the delirious effects associated with alcohol for most humanoids, such as debilitating intoxication, addiction, and alcohol poisoning.
That means people don't get any better looking the more you drink.
It says most humanoids have an enzyme which break down the alcohol-like compounds of synthahol. According to data, synthahol's intoxicating effects can easily be dismissed. So that's where I was thinking. I remember him saying that.
I know a lot of people's intoxicating effects can be dismissed. Ah, they're just drunk again.
The police are here. Whoa.
But enough about Dragon Con. Oh, let's see.
Clinton, I'm pregnant. Whoa.
Hey, what now? Who know? And the third thing that they don't want to see, apparently, is transporters. And I think, perhaps it's a side effect of that type of thing that was happening to Craig at the beginning of the episode, that, it's a great technology, but things can go horribly wrong with it.
I kind of like my arm up here, by the way.
Oh, all right. Well, to each his own, then. I guess maybe they're wrong about this.
Right.
Mutants on Futurama came from somewhere.
Yes. If you guys listening have any things that you think you would not want to be a thing that came to real life from Star Trek, you can drop us a note on our Facebook page over at The Topic is Trek on Facebook.
I was thinking about transporters. Okay, so if we all had transporters, we could transport on the planet to wherever. There would not be really an excuse to be late. But I'm sure people would still find an excuse to be late.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Back up in the transporter room. I just couldn't get to the front of the line,
Ran late.
Yeah. So thank goodness they don't have time travel as well, because then you'd really be out of luck.
Yeah, because we don't have WebEx in the future. No, I don't know. Why would you not want a transporter? I think it'd be fun. What was the reasoning? Did you read?
Risk?
Yeah, I think that was it. Risk.
What? Risk?
Yeah, the game Risk. They don't like the game Risk in the future.
You can't. How about Settlers of Catan?
How about Oregon Trail?
Yeah.
I can't get the page to cooperate with me here. Oh, let's see. Then it jumped way up to high. Well, you can read the article over at The Topic is Trek, and good luck getting the page to load. That's all I've got to say about that.
Okay.
All right. So let's move on to something from the benign to the sublime with this next article.
Over at electrek.com, Star Trek Foundation funds Warp Solar Water Purification System in Puerto Rico. Puerto Ricans in the coastal town of Loíza have looked to an MIT invention to get their water supply flowing again. Serving 600 Puerto Ricans, the Solar Plus Water Purification System produces 850 gallons of clean drinking water daily with rooftop rain barrels as storage. The solar panels used are a rollable thin film product. Sounds like some of the first Star Trek movies were thin film products.
Yes, sir. Oh. And McMahon showed up. I have no idea why.
No, that was Clinton's wharf.
It should be illegal.
Right you are.
Oh, boy.
The equipment deployed is a modified version of the off-grid solar water purification system developed by the Roddenberry Foundation. Is this like the Chinese clone version of it? The kit is called the Warp System Water Aid and Renewable Power System. That's...
Yeah, but he's going to have a copyright problem on his hands when we actually get Warp.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
MIT Lincoln Laboratory worked with Infinitum Humanitarian Geo Innovation and Energy Systems at Group. Wow, that's a mouthful.
Indeed.
Can we just call it the IHGESG?
No.
Sure.
to refine it. You know they don't use a whole lot of acronyms on Star Trek? You ever notice that? And yet the military, they're modeled after the military in terms of rank and ships and fleets and whatnot. The military is fraught with acronyms and initializations.
Sure. You mean they should just spell out five instead of just use M5. It should be five.
No, it would have been the M5-er.
Oh.
No, that would be M9-er. All right, anyway.
Well, the fiver, where was I? Pay $5 to compute something? Anyway, here we go.
They use it to refine it so it would be more suitable for deployment in the current Puerto Rican situation, replacing its tri-fuel generator with, that sounds futuristic, doesn't it?
It does.
With a solar-powered one and removing the need for batteries. The system was up and running within 5 days of the organization first visiting the site. Eric Limpeacher of Lincoln Laboratory saw the batteries had to go because of unique disaster conditions. Traditional off-grid solar power systems are designed to be used with batteries, but batteries require maintenance, and they're heavy and expensive, and they don't perform well in hot temperatures. As I found out today, we had to replace our car battery. They required additional power conversion gear, and they can be dangerous. All of these variables weighed much more than the standard solar installation due to the isolation of the region. Eric thought to replace the standard batteries with solar or storage container and refined wiring for the water purification. It gets a little technical now, but it's pretty cool.
Yeah, what I find interesting is that the last paragraph here above that bottom photo, you want to read that? Mm-hmm.
The Roddenberry Foundation was founded in 2010 by Rod Roddenberry, son of none other than Gene Roddenberry, creator of the Star Trek franchise. Ah, Clinton knows that Rod is just the nickname for...
Eugene? No.
That's what you told me when I got the trivia question. The Roddenberry Foundation funds innovative solutions to critical global issues in science and technology, the environment, education, and humanitarian advances. Good on them, I say.
Yes. I mean, I knew that that Roddenberry was into a lot of different projects and funding a lot of things. I didn't realize the scope extended this far, though.
Mm-hmm. No, I didn't either.
Yeah, and they'd need it in Puerto Rico, too. This is huge.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I think that's good on him, good on them, and a good project to be involved with.
Seemed appropriate.
I got a whistle out of that. I'm not sure what that means. Now back to the ridiculous after something like that to something from Craig.
And my name is synonymous with ridiculous. So I ran across this and it's a cartoon of Chief O'Brien at work.
on TNG when he was the transporter engineer.
Yeah, so when he was on TNG and they always walked in the transporter room, he was always there. It kind of makes sense when you think of it in that context, because you look at this and go, he's just standing there with this kind of smug, not even smug, just kind of sad bored look on his face.
Yeah.
And then every once in a while, you'll see his expression change and then he goes back to the the sad O'Brien look. And I don't know. I'm trying to think how to explain it.
Well, essentially, all the panels that you look at, for the most part, are exactly the same drawing. It's exactly the same image of O'Brien at the transporter console.
To denote just time passing, nothing happening.
They just repeat the panel again and again and again. Just
until
going on.
Something there was
said.
Yeah, so here you go. There was one where they call in and they say, Picard says, Chief O'Brien, Riker, myself, and Data need to go down to the planet. And he says, why don't you come down to the transporter room or something? And then they just forget it. We'll just do it ourselves.
We need a site-to-site transport. He goes, wouldn't you like to just come down and... Nope, never mind. We'll do it ourselves.
Yeah.
And then you go back to several panels of him just standing there by himself again.
It makes you wonder, he's the chief, which means he's in some sort of leadership position or seniority. Are there other
people?
He's
the master of all he surveys in that room.
It's like, and every time there's a failure on the transporter, he has to fix it. But that's a pretty limited career path. I can see why he went to Deep Space Nine.
So here you go. I'll read this one real quick. Here's Brian at the console, like we were talking about. He says, computer, run a diagnostic. The transporting software needs to be upgraded. Would you like to upgrade now? He goes,
oh, no.
Sure. I don't see why not.
Oh, no.
The system will be offline for the next 60 seconds. You will not be able to use the functions. Beginning upgrade now. And then it shows him standing there. And then Picard to transporter room.
Emergency beam out.
One to beam out immediately, or beam down immediately. He's standing there. Picard to transporter room. What's the holdup? He's waiting.
A little status bar going across.
Yeah. But yeah, some of them are, it's really well done because some of them are just hilarious. Like he beamed Tasha Yar in there by accident and she was naked. She just got out of the shower or something. I just thought that was hilarious. So anyway. Yeah, go check it out. Chief O'Brien at work.
Indeed.
Through the show notes, available only at thetopicistrek.com.
Bing. There.
Righty. And up next, we have a story about some things that make perfect gifts, I think. Eagle Moss debuts new Star Trek Starships retail packaging. When it comes to retail merchandise, space is literally the final frontier. That was the guiding principle behind the design of the new retail packaging for the best-selling ships in, I love this here, in the Eagle Moss Collection's official Star Trek Starships collection officially authorized by CBS Studios.
Wow.
From the iconic USS Enterprise NCC 1701 to the original Klingon Bird of Prey and beyond, each die-cast, hand-painted ship and it's an accompanying display stand is housed in a clear, form-fitting plastic tray, then secured in a redesigned window box, highlighting the ship's place in the Star Trek universe.
So they didn't so much redesign the toy as the box.
Well, I don't know if this is new or not, but they say an in-depth 20-page magazine specific to that ship is slid into the box under the tray. So that may be new as well in the packaging. I haven't picked up any of these yet. I do have small size starships, but I don't think of this scale or this
How
one.
How big is this thing?
By the look of it, I'm guessing
if it's a 20-page magazine. It looks more like about an 8-inch model.
You know, I'm trying to figure out if this is. I saw this on Amazon. Mm-hmm. Aside from this article, And I don't know if this is the same one, but it doesn't look huge. I can't tell if this is the same one or not. The packaging does look updated.
Indeed. And think about the form-fitting plastic. So if you're wondering what the ships that are available, and they're manufacturer suggested retail price of $22.95, we have NCC 1701, as well as A, B, C, D, and E.
F, G, H, I, J. Okay.
No, we just go through.
No bloody E. A, no bloody B.
No, we have those actually.
Sold out. Sold out. Sold out.
We have the Klingon Bird of Prey,
command
Enterprise 17.
Functions are offline.
The Enterprise NX-01, a Romulan Warbird, Voyager, Klingon Battlecruiser, and the Defiant.
And the Orville.
No, not the Orville. No. Stop that. Just stop that. And the Firefly, though, is in there as well. So no.
I don't know about you guys, but I would really like a small collection of starships like this. You know, they don't have to be huge, just something I can put on the shelf behind me. That wouldn't kill my pocketbook, you know?
Well, this is not bad. This is, you know, if you get it less than list is $23.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there's not like 12 of them to pick from. So
I don't know about y'all, but which is your favorite Enterprise?
Well, it's a split between the television series and the Star Trek, the motion picture Enterprise.
Yeah.
So the original 1701 and A.
Yeah.
What you're saying? I like the A as well.
The sort of A.
I do like the Enterprise E though. That one was kind of cool too.
It seemed to get a bit noisy on its detailing, I thought. It just, you know, of course noise on the detailing seems to be what all the ships have these days. So the ships these days with their detailing and their little nooks and crannies, don't get me started.
What are you looking for? Something like a Soviet submarine class? No windows, one hatch. That's it.
That's right.
Well,
and don't open the hatch while you're in space. It's a really bad idea.
I gotta say, I like the original series one, but the motion picture one I love because it almost has that kind of Art Deco look with the large nacelle or the stand up nacelles. Mm-hmm. I like that. I love that look. And for me, it's kind of the split between that and the Enterprise D because I really got attached to that ship. Although I thought it looked funny when you first started watching it for the first time, it's like, okay. Got some weird angles to it.
It looks sat on or something.
Yeah, like huge. But I ended up loving the whole series, of course, and the Enterprise along with it. So,
all right. Well, and I don't know if they're coming out with other ships in this line or not, but I think we'll have to wait. At this point, we have to wait till next Christmas to get something that size because the Discovery will be the next year's Hallmark ornament, which might be around this roughly the same size as some of these, but I'd like to see some other ships there. But then again, I haven't bought any of these. They'll go, hey, if you buy these, we'll make some more of the other ones. So it's on me to get something from them first.
Yeah.
And our last story in the news roundup comes to us from Chuck.
I like the Klingon death ship myself. Could you make one of those? The ship of the dead.
Yeah. Lots of little
skulls. Sarcophagus.
Yeah, lots of little dead people glued to the side. That's heavy in the detailing.
There's your detailing there, right there.
From TVinsider.com, CBS Television Studios announced on Tuesday, December 5th, the upcoming release of the original series musical score for Star Trek Discovery, the latest incarnation of the classic sci-fi franchise that is streaming on CBS All Access. The soundtrack album, featuring the score by Emmy-winning composer Jeff Russo, will be available globally as digital downloads starting Friday, December 15th. That's the day we release this show. With pre-sales beginning Friday, December 8th, a CD and vinyl album release of the soundtrack are expected in early 2018 because they have to get them.
I want my A-track.
Available at A-track and cassette. Please allow 6 to 8 weeks for delivery.
Hey, speaking of technologies we don't want back.
It only cost a penny.
Yeah, penny.
The producers and I talked a lot about telling this story from the emotional point of view, explained Russo about his score. Relationships play a big role in this incarnation of the series. So trying to be true to that and create themes that connect characters is important. Grand, glorious, hopeful, heartbreaking, intimate, bittersweet, tense, soaring, surprising. Over 51 years in its many iterations, there's been no shortage of adjectives to describe the music of Star Trek, says series co-creator Alex Kurtzman. On the other hand, the list of composers capable of capturing them all is short. And this is where Jeff Russo comes in. Jeff manages to hold each note in beautiful balance, evoking the nostalgia of Alexander Courage's original theme, while scoring Discovery with its own unique ear and heart. We're lucky to have him, and we hope you love his music as much as we do. It was much better than Cats. I'm going to see it again and again. So
it's actually part of the article. It's amazing. No, no.
Star Trek Discovery soundtrack album track listing. Listen now, and you'll get hits like Main Title, aired version.
Woo.
We Come in Peace. First Officer's Log.
Is that the haunting torchbearer melody I hear?
That's from the captain's bathroom. Sorry.
I like. Yes. Well, Cut 7. You'll just want to play every day.
PTSD. Captain Mud, followed by Stella. Undetermined. Weakened Shields. And my favorite, What's Happening? What's that classic 80s hit. You just listen to Star Trek music and that breaks in. That would be terrible.
See a rerun coming down the sidewalk right now. That's funny.
And we have what I'm interested in is Main Title Extended, because I don't know if that's a new version of it, whether that's just the end title, which kind of is the beginning theme, but without the...
it goes like this.
Hey, don't nope. Flag us.
Nope. No, nope. This is a legit track that Keith gave me. It actually has kind of a Star Trek theme. He said, do you want to use this for your podcast? I said, I'll squeeze it in somewhere. Hey. So here it is as bed music while we just...
As soon as Taylor Swift starts singing, cut it off.
Oh, trust me, I will.
That's what she said. But anyway, let's see what's going on. So if you're listening to this after we record it, which obviously is the thing you have to be able to do, it sounds like this is available for you to download. Mm-hmm. It doesn't give places where it's downloadable from, but I'm sure you're
all the major places
to download music from. All right. And that closes out our subspace chatter.
This is a long song.
All right. Just close it out.
It gets going. You haven't got to the crescendo yet. All right.
Actually, I like the music on our show. The opening.
Yeah.
It's very Star Trek like.
Yes, it is. All right, we'll kill that.
Ugh.
Where are we going next, Captain?
We're going on our main mission. Why is this show going so horribly wrong? All right.
Tribbles on the bridge again.
We're going to take a Z-minus 10,000 meter deep dive into one subject and try to stay on course, which always fails.
Never.
So our main mission topic is this. All right, let's assume Quentin Tarantino is actually going to direct a Star Trek film. What do we think about that? So I will start with Craig, since he's the one who brought this first to our attention about this, this possibility.
Well, I'll tell you, I think it has the potential to really blow it up. I mean, in a good way, not like we're blowing up the Enterprise.
Again?
I think I find, this is my personal opinion on Quentin Tarantino, but I find that he is a master and student of film, and I think he knows exactly what he's doing. His films have gotten more spot on as time goes on. You know, when I say like that, he's like, he can capture the essence of a moment. Watching The Hateful Eight, you know, there was a lot of tension there, Pulp Fiction, any of that stuff. And so I think he has a lot to add to it. So I'm looking forward to this if it does come to fruition.
Well, my feeling is that I'm tentative about it only from the standpoint that while it, I don't think it's any doubt that it would make an interesting film. The question is, how would it fit with anything else that's come along? I mean, people have a lot of issues dealing with Discovery and how it fits into things.
Or the old verse.
And I just have a feeling that this would be miles beyond that. We would go such a leap from what we saw even in, say, Star Trek Beyond to what Quentin Tarantino might do, that I just wonder. Also, the restriction, I think that one of his things that he says, it would have to be an R-rated Star Trek.
Right.
And, you know, that's, we've already got pushback when people said, well, you know, now they're PG-13 and now all of a sudden it's going to be an R, and what's going on here? Well, and obviously if you rated R, you're losing the low end of your audience.
Well, you could argue that nowadays R is PG-13.
Yeah.
You know, you know what I'm saying? So I'm with you. I believe that Star Trek is a mostly family friendly property, and that would change the equation a bit.
I mean, don't get me wrong. We've already had that envelope being pushed a bit by Discovery itself. I mean, you have more gore and you have swearing in Discovery. True. Trying to push the envelope in that direction. So it's not like it's not going there, but, and this would distinguish it from other franchises that might be out there with a completely different take, you know, kind of a, I almost think of it as like a Deadpool take on Star Trek.
Well, hopefully don't cuss that much.
No, but, but I don't know. What do you think, Chuck?
I'm with you, Clinton. I'm kind of cautiously optimistic, but yet I understand Craig's viewpoint of, you know, giving that depth, that experience to evoke the emotion. I'm on the fence of kind of like the superhero movies. Do we need to go? It's probably not going to be light and lively. It's going to have some more dark spots to it. And, you know, didn't we already go there once and say, you know, that isn't really working, so let's not?
Yeah, I mean, and I don't want to sound down on it from the standpoint of seeing this thing produced. I'm just trying to figure out where it fits in with everything else that's around it.
Yeah.
Once it does, you know, if you have this item, it's like one of these things is not like the others. And really not like the others.
Well, are we starting to get that already? I mean, we don't have a consistent director on every movie.
Right.
I mean, in the early days, there was sort of a close-knit community. I mean, if you saw Shatner or Nimoy step up to the director's chair, you go, okay, you know, we know they know the franchise, and we know they know where the storyline is going and how the character should behave and whatnot. As we start to get some of these bigger names, yeah, it's great they've got experience. It's great that they're bringing that wealth of experience to the franchise. But like you said, Clinton, what does it mean to how this fits in with if JJ's got his viewpoint of how Star Trek should be, and then we change to, you know, swing over to Tarantino. Is that? Yeah, I'm curious that we're going to get sort of a quilting party going here, where it's a patchwork quilt of incongruous elements.
Well, maybe Star Trek does need a little bit of a shake up.
Yeah, I certainly don't disagree that it's always good if you think things are becoming, you know, kind of complacent, or you don't
are they?
The direction or things. Well, I think that you've now had three films in a row, right? And because we're talking about film, and it's kind of weird, you have to, you know, separate the film from the TV and all that kind of stuff. But you've had three films going in that direction that have arguably been around the same tone.
Yes.
Roughly, you know, the same tone. So if you have a fourth one that's around the same tone, is it bringing anything new to the party? Is it, you know, well, why do I want to see the fourth one? I've seen the first three, you know, it's good to see the next one, but is it going to necessarily create the buzz, the excitement about seeing another Star Trek movie? If there's something else you can say about it, if it's shaken up in some way, if you're saying, well, that's a loose cannon approach to doing Star Trek, I'm really intrigued by that. You know, that could be a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this could be, you know, the Sergeant Pepper's moment of Star Trek, where it turns a corner and you know, everybody goes gangbusters over it.
Oh, because my mind went to the Sergeant Pepper movie rather than the album.
No, the album. The album was a watershed moment in the Beatles' career is what I was referring to.
Yes. Okay, good, because I was thinking, no, that's the wrong example to give.
Sorry to throw the misdirection
there. Look at Kirk's uniform.
Yeah, one's blue, one's yellow. That's what they are now. They're all frilly.
I seriously think that if done right, you know, that this could be, just like you said, a shake up enough maybe to give it a little different direction, or, you know, make it a little more exciting. You know, I'll be honest with you, although I love watching Star Trek on the big screen, I think it suits the smaller screen much better.
Yeah, I agree. And it's possible that if you have this kind of left-hand take, you know, I don't want to make it sound like this is a David Lynch film or something, but something that makes you go, oh, so that's what it could be on the big screen. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe you're seeing a different take on what distinguishes Trek on the big screen from Trek on the small screen. Right now, a lot of what distinguishes Trek on the big screen is you have bigger battles more often.
Yeah. And,
you know,
and Chris Pine had spoke to this, where he mentioned that, you know, when you have a big film like this, it's got to be more of an action, sci-fi action thing, you know, movie rep, because nobody wants to go see a heady movie that makes you think.
A cerebral Star Trek.
Yeah, the cerebral. Yeah, go back to the cerebral. It's too cerebral. You know, that's why I like the TV show, because it can be a little bit of both. It can mix it up. There's some action. And then, oh, we can focus on this character this time. There's some that make you go, oh, okay, it was for the greater good, or, you know, whatever, to make you think.
Yep.
So I think TV, it's more flexible on TV. But again, I'm a huge fan of Quentin Tarantino. I think that he would bring a lot to the table, and I think it'll make something worth seeing.
And I think that Paramount, as the article you were reading, Craig, originally from Deadline, talks about the fact that there's a new head at Paramount Studios. And I think one of the things he is probably evaluating is what is the future of that franchise. Mm-hmm. And, you know, imagine if you're trying to make that decision and you have Quentin Tarantino and J.J. Abrams coming to you with, hey, we've got this great idea. You know, that might be a bit more appealing to you to say, okay, this sounds like something that I can, you know, put my stamp on, saying, look at what I'm doing here. You know, changing around this franchise to make it something that people are going to be, you know, talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And so but all of this still, I'd like to have some official word from somebody that it's happening. All this, as we've talked about, is speculation that should this be happening.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I comb every day waiting for anything that's kind of an announcement. But I think if we're talking about the timeline we've been talking about, it's probably a while yet. And you're correct, Craig, that I think there was another article that said they already have pitched the idea to some writers, and it's almost like the writers are trying to come back with their takes on his idea before they pick a screenwriter for it. And again, if we're parsing these stories that we're hearing, if they're true, that sounds like the stage that we're at, which would take a while.
He's a prolific writer himself, but he's also filming or getting ready to direct his own film. So yeah, I would hope they pick somebody that's totally, you know, agreeing or right in his wheelhouse kind of thing.
And I've got a feeling there's probably a lot of, you know, collaborative rewrites after that anyway.
Yeah. And speaking of speculation and hopefulness, it'd be interesting to see. Patrick Stewart said that he would be willing to play Picard again under a Quentin Tarantino film. I was like, I'll be down for that.
Yes. Yes. And I believe that some of the ideas, because he was talking about his favorite episodes, seem to involve time travel. He was talking about Yesterday's Enterprise and City on the Edge of Forever.
Yes.
And it's also interesting because that, now remember that one of the things they announced for Star Trek 4, not old 4, new 4.
No. Oh. I thought we were saving the whales when you said time travel. No.
Well, but maybe.
Chris Hemsworth is supposed to be assigned to this next movie. Okay, so if you had, you could, that would work if you have something time travel. Okay, so we have Kirk's dad and Kirk and Picard and all
Thor.
These different, well, yeah, I mean, that goes without saying. But what's interesting is that Chris Hemsworth would have to somehow get rid of his bulk because, you know, Kirk's dad was not that buff, you know.
No, and I was, that's why I was really surprised at what Chris did between, you know, Star Trek 2009 and Thor. Like, I had a hard time believing that was the same actor. It was incredible.
Hey, Chris, can you, I mean, like, he was, not he, work out for this movie?
He did fill out the Starfleet uniform pretty well. I mean, but he wasn't as
but
massive
he didn't go,
as he was.
He didn't go, look, Captain Robo, and like, flex his arm to point
the transporter is over there.
Exactly.
Look at this. Look at these guns on the bridge.
So that's another aspect of this, though, that, cause it's, the article mentioned that, Tarantino had done some episodes of CSI and ER because he would walk into this with a cast, unless he's going to say, I don't want to use that cast altogether, that he would walk in with an existing cast. So he is not cast Kirk and Picard and Bones and everyone. Those people are already set with a contract, well, or they're going
to be signed. I hope so, because I think a lot of those people are spot on, especially,
Carl Urban.
Yeah, Carl Urban. Oh my gosh. I love him as Bones.
He has to stay on as Bones.
Right. Yeah. So I mean, I'm assuming they would stay. I'm assuming this is a continuation of that cast, but who knows? No idea. It could to take a different direction for all we know. So I'll be interested. We will keep our ears and eyes open if we hear anything further on this, some press release buried somewhere about something going on with Bad Robot or, you know, Tarantino Productions or Paramount. We'll be sure to let you know here on The Topic is Trek.
You know why?
Why?
Because the topic is Trek.
It is indeed. And it's time to return from our main mission and head for our quick warp speed roundtable. Now that we're safely back on board, it's time to take on one rapid fire topic in Warp Speed Roundtable.
Oh my.
And the name of this game is Pick a Pet Round 2.
Oh, jeez.
Once again, listener Diane has presented us with a choice of which pet we would like to have. And she promises that this one is a kinder, gentler selection than the one we did back in episode 7.
Okay.
Don't believe it.
Yeah.
By the way, if anyone out there has suggestions for our Warp Speed Roundtable, just go to our Facebook page and leave us a note.
Yeah.
So, back to Diane's choices. Which of these would you rather have and why? Would you like to have Dr. Phlox's Pyrithian Bat, Miles O'Brien's Lycosa Tarantula.
I think it's pronounced Tarantula.
No, that's if I was pronouncing it.
He's the director.
Or
Quentin Tarantula.
Or Captain Picard's Lionfish. So I will start with Chuck.
I rolled a one.
Yes.
I'm going with the Lionfish. I think
and
it's,
why?
None of the others really seem to. I don't gravitate towards them. It's not something I would walk in and go, "Oh wow, what a beautiful bat!" Or bats are wonderful creatures. Or
only a wooden.
Can I hold the tarantula? Not really. But you don't ask to hold a lionfish because it's dangerously poisonous.
Yes, that would be bad.
But since it's in an aquarium, you don't have to worry about it hitting anybody or stabbing anybody or stinging anybody or when you see the fishbowl with the lionfish, you walk into the captain's quarter or captain's office and you say, "That's a beautiful aquarium. I love the fish."
It makes
more of an impression on me. It's an aesthetic thing.
All right. Fair enough. I will next ask Craig.
I was also going to go for the lionfish because apparently it never needs feeding.
It's a computer-generated fish. He's got a screensaver aquarium.
Yeah. Actually, Picard's probably got the food replicator set up where it just transports some fish food about an inch away from the water and just falls in. I don't know. But, I would take it because I don't think, obviously, you don't have to feed it.
And I would go with the bat. We could never have and go anywhere near a tarantula. I just couldn't deal with that. And lionfish, putting on my hat, for ecology, lionfish are very, very bad for the environment. They've been introduced into the East Coast and they're just taking over.
It doesn't matter. It's in space. Two, it's in there by itself.
Aren't they a tropical fish?
It is a tropical fish, but
how are they surviving on the East Coast?
Very well, thank you. They're all through the Caribbean and they have no natural predators.
East Coast. I thought you met up by you. I'm going, how the heck are they living up in Boston?
Very carefully.
Next, they'll be coming in those inland waterways like the sea lampreys.
They wear these little coats and hats. You know, that makes them cute looking. I mean, I understand that.
We're here. We're here to move in.
Disney's going to make a movie. Wazirinya! The Lionfish.
Brilliant. It'll be on Broadway. We'll make a live action and an animated version.
Done and done.
All right. All right. So we actually have a winner this week.
We didn't tie.
This is amazing. First time for everything. Write it down, people.
Yeah.
So as a reminder, if anyone has any suggestion for our Warp Speed Roundtable, just go over to our Facebook page at The Topic is Trek on Facebook and leave us a note. All right, gentlemen, it's time to boldly go that away until next time.
Which way?
If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic is Trek. Visit our Facebook page or visit thetopicistrek.com. And be sure to check out the other mostly non-Trek related podcasts we work on, Technorama and Comedy Forecast. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic is Trek, don't put on
the red shirt.
Sure.
Do we have any listeners yet?
I don't know.